Welcome to the Connect to Youth podcast, discussions on child and youth care. Over the past several podcasts, we've been talking with young people who have experience in the youth social service system, as well as authors who work with young people. Today, I invited Helen Jones to speak about what it is like to enter the system as a parent seeking support. Helen Jones is a founder, past president of, and spokesperson for the Association of Parent Support Groups in Ontario, APSCO. As an experienced speaker on parenting adolescents to young adults, she has been a frequent guest on national radio and television. She has two of her own television shows, Helen Help Us, and on iChannel Teenzilla. Her ideas have been printed in parenting periodicals, national magazines, and newspapers. She's on the faculty of the William Glasser Institute and has provided training for teachers, counselors, parents, and students. All of this comes out of her being the mother of three grown daughters herself and now a grandmother of four granddaughters. Welcome, Helen Jones.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
Thank you very much. So I would like to start with how you first became involved in the social service system.
Well, the easiest way of all to get involved with social services is to have an adolescent child, and I did. I had I had three daughters, as you said, and when the oldest was about 14, she started exhibiting really different behaviors. Up until then, she'd been a really happy child, liked by her teachers, loved school, easygoing, well-behaved, I guess you would say, thoughtful, insightful child. But then she started sneaking things such as, you know, claiming she had done her homework when she hadn't, and staying out later or not coming home. Just small things at first, but they were out of character. I didn't pay too much attention to them at first. But then I was getting calls from the school, and she wasn't handing in assignments, and she was swearing that she had done them. And this went on, and finally to the point where she was staying out all night, and things were very difficult at home, short fuse, very quick-tempered. And, of course, we were becoming more anxious and more afraid. And sadly, instead of easing up on some restrictions, we made more and more restrictions, thinking that was the answer. It wasn't. And so ultimately, when she had been staying out, and so on, we decided that we had to ask something, we had to get some kind of help, somebody had to know what to do. So we called the children's aid, and actually, we called because my daughter decided that she wanted to go to a foster home with a swimming pool, she hoped. And so we became involved with Children's Aid and had a very disappointing experience. We had assumed, sadly, in our innocence and inexperience, we had assumed that being Children's Aid, that they would be experienced and knowledgeable and willing to help parents who were having difficulty with their children, and we found that that really wasn't the case.
Let's start with what you first started to do. So she started to exhibit a change in behavior,
right,
and you started to notice some things that were different. What was your initial response to that?
Well, our initial response was that we must be mistaken. You know, she had never been difficult before, so when teachers called and said that homework assignments hadn't been done, and she was saying, yes, they did, I handed them in, we were actually initially irritated at the teachers because we thought, well, they've misplaced them, you know, this is so inconvenient. But, you know, after the third or fourth time, you start to think, well, just, you know, are all these teachers misplacing her assignments? And from then, it was a painful leap to the idea that, well, just a minute, many of the things that we assumed were truthful, obviously, were not, or very possibly were not. So money going missing, things being done, assignments being handed in, and so on. The dials that we had previously accepted just, I guess, grew too many to be acceptable. And at that point, we thought, oh, we've got to do something. It was scary and different because She was like a hostile stranger in the house, you know. It wasn't the person that we had known. That was scary. So we thought, well, we have to be more firm. We have to monitor more carefully, which all of these things we tried, removing privileges, removing things, and a lot of yelling and shouting. Even though we tried not to, there was a lot of yelling and shouting. Very strained atmosphere in our home. All of us were having a hard time being calm. The slightest innocent comment could result in a flare-up and yelling and shouting. And just very, very sad and lonely time for all of us. I'm sure for our daughter too, certainly for us, and for our two younger daughters who were 6 and 8 at the time. So we were very concerned about them. They were experiencing the fallout from all of this going on. And they were sad, too, about their sister. She was becoming a stranger to them, too. And just a feeling of helpless and embarrassment. And who can you talk to? And nobody. And feeling very judged and not wanting to speak to even family. And the odd occasion when we did bring it up, kind of tentatively broached the idea that we were having some problems, people would make suggestions which were just, well, have you tried grounding her? And, you know, we were way past grounding. We had a daughter who let herself out of her bedroom window and climbed down the roof and left. So in retrospect, it's funny. Well, it wasn't at the time. Very... very scary.
Yeah, it sounds like a very scary, a very difficult situation.
Yes.
You use the analogy of a stranger in your own home, and it sounds like a very difficult situation. And you were looking for what to do, and what was your experience like when you first went to Children's Aid? And maybe you could tell us what year this was as
this,
well.
This was, this was quite a few years ago, more than 25 years ago.
Okay.
And we had gone, I often think about that and hope that things have changed in the interim. I'm sure they must have. But when she had mentioned this, how she wanted to be in a foster home, and this was breaking my heart. It was really awful. But we called Children's Aid, and they sent a worker to the house, and she had a conversation. We had this family conversation with what was going on, what was happening, why, and so on. And this was when our daughter asked if the home she went to could have a swimming pool. And so then we had an appointment at the offices of the Children's Aid. And that was very... I remember going up in the elevator to the room, my husband and my daughter and I, and... I remember thinking, "Oh, how did this happen to us? You know, we're nice people. I was a stay-at-home mom. I did a lot of volunteer work at the school. We had a nice home, nice area. I thought we were good people, it seemed to me. And I was very puzzled. How could this have happened to us? I had my own prejudices. I always assumed if children were running around at night late, it was the parents' fault, and why are these children not home, and so on. And I guess it was a real wake-up call for me to realize that no matter how hard you try or how good you think you are or how many right things you do, young people have a mind of their own, and if they decide that they're going to do things differently, you have to learn how to deal with it really quickly. We didn't. We didn't learn how to deal with it really quickly. And we all paid for that. It was difficult. We did the traditional things and things that we were told, you know, be more strict, remove privileges, etc. And as I said earlier, none of that worked.
And what happened when you went to Children's Aid?
Well, there seemed to be always these forms to be filled in. We were always being assessed. Many of the questions we were asked seemed to us to have nothing to do with anything. I'm assuming they were used for statistical use had either my husband or I been abandoned in childhood, had I had difficult deliveries and so on. Hearing these questions were very depressing. It seemed like what does this have to do with anything? Perhaps if it had been explained to us, we use these figures to help us provide support or whatever, it would have meant something. But I wasn't, and my husband wasn't very, we weren't very receptive to them. We answered them, but we didn't see the good of them. And many, many assessment forms to be filled in. We always felt we were being assessed, and for assessed, we'd judged. Finally, we had a meeting with one woman, an intake worker, I think. There were so many names, intake, outtake, caretake, workers. And we had a conversation with her. It was a short one, as it turned out. And we'd been speaking for about maybe 15 minutes or so, and trying to describe how things were at home. And I was describing some of the things I had tried, and as I have just related, and out of the blue, she said, "You've done a hellish job of being a mother." And I was dumbfounded, and angry and upset. And I think my husband thought, "Well, I'm not getting into this." And you know, he was dumbfounded also. Interestingly, we left the meeting, kind of was drawn to a close. And interestingly, as we were leaving, it was my daughter who commented. We didn't say anything. We didn't say anything to her, to one another, I guess. You know, we were waiting for privacy to discuss what had happened. But my daughter commented, and she was very angry with the worker and said, who does she think she is? And then made what I thought was a very telling comment, that if I ever needed a kidney transplant, I wouldn't get one from her. The assumption, the silent statement being that from her hellish mother she would get a kidney. I was somewhat relieved that, and I think that helped me to deal with the event, that my daughter had noticed and had responded in that fashion to someone criticizing her mother, which told me that maybe the hostile stranger wasn't quite as hostile. And it was certainly a hopeful moment for me, and I know for my husband.
Yes, it creates that opportunity,
yes,
for a relationship.
It does.
That is,
yes,
there. And out of that opportunity, you've decided to seek support,
yes,
outside,
yes,
of the formal system.
Yes.
And you were a founding member, yes, of the Association of Parent Support Groups in Ontario.
That's right.
Can you tell me a bit about what APSCO does?
Well, what APSCO does, I guess I can summarize it in 3 points. First of all, I'm a great believer that I now know from experience and from the experience of other parents that what parents need, all parents, whether your kids are 6 months old or 16 years old or sometimes older, what they need is immediate help. Someone they can call right away and say, this is what's happening. What should I do? You know, either it's because the baby won't eat or the 16-year-old is not come home, whatever. Sometimes it's fairly trivial. Sometimes it's very serious. But they need to be able to call someone, if for no other reason than to remain calm, keep a sense of perspective, and come up with some ideas. The second thing they need is they need practical help, not some theoretical jibber-jabber that someone has come up with from sitting in some ivory tower while the rest of us are in the trenches trying to deal with these situations. They need practical help. And that help has to be proven. We have to know that it makes sense and other people have tried it and it works. And the last thing they need, and these are all equally important, but the last thing is they need an environment which is safe, where they can say what they want, where they can fess up if necessary to yelling and shouting. They don't have to pretend to be perfect. They can acknowledge that they haven't always done the right thing, but they've done the best they could, and they're willing to do differently. They need to have that safe environment where there's no criticism, no judgment, just what are you doing, what's working, what isn't, would you be willing to try something different?
And what is that something different that APSCO offers?
Well, we have a formula which works really well, we have found. We call it the 4 Ds. We try to make things as easy for parents as we can, and if we can come up with a formula for things we do. And there's 4 Ds. The first D is disengage. What we mean by that is stop talking about whatever the main issue is. Usually there's one. It's drinking, or it's foul language, or it's stealing, or whatever. And what we say is stop talking about it. Set your boundary or whatever, you know, about coming in at whatever time or whatever, and then leave it alone. Don't talk about it again. The second D is dialogue. If you're not talking about drinking, if you're not talking about truanting, if you're not talking about, you're going to have lots of time to talk about more important things, you know, like how are you doing, you look good in that shirt, you know, just the ordinary conversation that seems to disappear, which is so important in cementing relationships. The third D is demonstrate. The best way, any good teacher knows the best way to teach is to demonstrate. So what we say to parents is demonstrate for your child the life that you want them to live. Be active in your community, do volunteer work, you know, if you're part of a faith group, go attend your faith place. Be a happy, cheerful person, be, you know, work at the job that you want, do your best work. Do what you want your child to do. Do it. Demonstrate it. And the last D is don't give up. Don't ever give up. Things will get better. When you use this approach, things will improve and gradually take you to the kind of relationship you want to have with your child.
So 25 years on, mm-hmm. How's it working?
It's working really well. That, you know, is it working is the most important question that we ask parents to ask themselves. Is what I'm doing working? It doesn't matter if it's good. It doesn't matter if your mother and your grandmother through the ages used it. Is it working for you? And if it isn't, would you be willing to try something a little different? Small steps, baby steps at a time. We don't ask people to do make big steps, but small ones.
People come to you. They've tried lots of things. They've tried the grounding, the punishments. It's not working. They come to you. They're open. They're willing to try, and it does work.
It does work. Yes, and you know, sometimes they come and they're a little bit nervous. They're not quite sure what we're going to suggest, and they're a little bit reluctant. But we provide that safe environment, and we let them know, you know, we've used these ideas. They're small. They're very small baby steps, and we're not asking you to do big things at the beginning. Maybe never. Maybe the baby steps will always be enough.
Some of the ideas that APSCO has is they go against much of what is taught in the social services, much of what we think of as practice wisdom over the years. So there's one example that you say that the idea is that rules can be enforced is a myth.
Yes.
We base a great deal of our culture on the idea that we can enforce rules. Mm-hmm. Why is it a myth?
It's a myth because we can't. If we stop to think about it, all we can do is punish people after they've broken the rules. We can't enforce the rules. We can simply let people know you're going to jail if you do this, or you're going to be fined, or you're going to be grounded, or you're going to be penalized in some way if you do this. In order to enforce rules, we'd have to have some kind of police officer or a person that following each and every one of us around. Now, the good news is most rules don't need to be enforced. The vast majority of us do the right thing because it is the right thing. We don't rob banks, we don't kick dogs, we don't use foul language because it is the right thing and we do it. Rules really are simply used to allow us to really to have a judicial system so that the lawyers and the judges know, okay, this is the legal aspect of what you've done and these are the legal consequences. But in the home, in society, we can't enforce rules. And when we try to enforce them, we run into a lot of difficulty. What we have to do as parents especially is to demonstrate that respecting the rules of society, respecting the rules of good behaviour, means that we'll be much happier, more content, more successful, and we'll get a lot further.
So if parents are demonstrating that and the young person is robbing banks, the young person is kicking the dog, what do we do as parents?
Well, we allow the consequences of that behaviour to take place. What we have to remember is I'm not the judge and jury. I'm mother or I'm father. So I may be obliged to call the police if I know that my son is robbing banks or doing other illegal stuff, but it doesn't have to stop me relating to him. What I am saying to my son is, I respect the law of the land. The law of the land says you can't do this. And as a parent and a responsible person, I have to inform the authorities so that they can do whatever they have to do. I will always love you. I will always be your friend. I will always support you in the best way that I know how, in everything except being a disruptive person in society.
And so if young people are exhibiting that disruptive behavior, are breaking the law, then you suggest that the authorities are informed?
Oh, certainly. If they're breaking the law, absolutely. Allow them to experience the consequences with the authorities. It's the right thing to do. We hope that young offenders, first offenders, that they'll be treated judiciously, and usually they are. I know that the Youth the Criminal Justice Act doesn't get a lot of respect, but in fact it really is a parent's dream and society's a dream. It's a wonderful piece of legislation because what it has tried to do is protect society while at the same time giving the young person an opportunity to learn and to go through life without having a criminal record to hold them back.
What do you think about the changes coming to the Canadian criminal justice system with the revised Bill
yes.
C-30?
Well, I think that we have to be very careful. I think these changes are probably happening because it's very true that justice is not only has to be done, it has to be seen to be done. And however fair and we deal with people, if the community as a whole think that everybody is getting off with everything, then they won't be happy. It would be very unsettling. I think that I don't know that they're necessary except to comfort society, to lead them to believe that, yes, something's being done. And I think that might be the only.
So rules can't be enforced, and yet the judicial structure mm-hmm. in place still
yes.
serves a
yes.
purpose.
Absolutely, it still serves a purpose, because while the vast majority of us do respect the rights of others and behave accordingly and do the right thing, there's always a small number who don't. It is a small number. It seems like a lot of people, but it's a small number. And for that small number, the rest of us need to be protected.
There's something about that that is intriguing for me, because what you're saying is, I will not accept this behavior, and I'm still going to love you, and I'm going to disengage, I'm going to dialogue, I'm going to demonstrate, I'm not going to give up. And yet there's parameters on our relationship. I'm going to be a mother, mm-hmm. a father, mm-hmm. a brother, mm-hmm. and you're going to be, my daughter, my son, mm-hmm. my sibling. And it seems to separate the roles between the parents and the police mm-hmm. and the social services. Can you explain more about the importance of those roles?
Oh, absolutely. I love to do this. One, I think you're right. We do separate the role. I'm a mother or father, brother, whatever your role is. That is my only job. And I'm the only one who can do it. Teachers can't do it. Police officers can't do it. No one can do it. I'm always there. I'm always going to do it. And you're not just a file to me. We won't close the file when you're 18 and say so long. The police have a job to do. The school counselor, the teacher, all of these people have a job to do. And it is their job to concentrate on that job. What is their job, the parameters of their job, to do it to the best of their ability? My job is to be a mother and to do it to the best of my ability. And that really requires looking at the job description. What do mothers do? Well, mothers don't jail their children. They don't and shouldn't be punishing them for something that there are other authorities to do this for. And this is not, you know, sometimes people will think, well, this is putting it off onto somebody else, but it isn't. It is giving it to the people who do it best. One of the interesting things about this approach is that when parents try to be probation officers or homework police or whomever, children become very resentful. They if a teacher hands out a consequence for not handing in an assignment, children expect that. They don't like it, but they expect the teacher to do it. They don't expect a parent to do it. Now a parent has stepped out of that very precious role of being a parent and into an area that is not the parent's role. And that can create confusion and a lot of resentment. Children will take from the police, from the judge, from the teachers, what is in their area, what they want from a parent, what is in their area.
Nicely said. What do you see as the role for social services then?
Well, I see the role for social services as being a support for parents, as being a resource for parents. And when I say resource, I mean with ideas, with encouragement, with a new way of looking at things, as even as a referral for APSCoL, but mostly as a support for parents. And sometimes the approach has been that the parent is at fault. That might be the case in some instances. But most of the time, if the parent is at fault, it's because it's the best they know how. Perhaps their own parenting skills aren't great, but they've done what they think is the right thing. What they need to hear is, you know what, if this isn't working for you, we've got other ideas that can work for you. We know you're doing your best, and we're here to help you do even better.
Last question. What would you have liked your first visit to Children's Aid to have been like?
I would have loved had anyone there had said, we know that you're, we know how difficult this is for you, and we know that you're, it can be bewildering and scary. We know all of that. We talk to many parents, and that's how they feel. You're not alone. The many parents are experiencing this, and we know that there are ideas and resources and plans and a different way of doing things, and we're happy to discuss them with you.
Thank you very much, Helen Jones.
Oh, my pleasure.
Is there anything else that you wanted to add before we wrap up?
No, except that it's been my pleasure to have done this, and I'm always happy to help.
Thank you very much.